This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us. Learn about who our guests are before anybody else and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And our guest today is a wonderful, wonderful performer, and we're proud to say a friend, Fred Willard.
Glad to be here, Leonard.
Whoever you people are.
I wasn't quite sure of your name. No, it's a pleasure to be here. I have in my bookcase about three of your books, you know, 1,000 reviews of movies. And every once in a while I say, let's see what Leonard had to say about this one.
Well, that's nice. That's very flattering. Yeah.
Then he threw the book on the floor and said, you're wrong. You're wrong every time.
Well, Fred is somebody that I think the word that comes to mind is ubiquitous.
Yes.
You're everywhere. Oh. If we read off your credits, it would fill the hour, Fred. Oh. It really would. I'm not blowing smoke at you. I mean, this is just a fact. I was looking up today. I didn't know that you were in guest shots as far back as Get Smart. Get Smart and Bob Newhart and Laverne and Shirley. But the thing about you is that you were contemporary then, and you're contemporary now.
Oh.
I mean, you've done everything from old school sitcoms to Comedy Bang Bang.
Yes.
And you're on Jeff Ross's
historical God.
Yes.
Well, Get Smart, I wasn't quite contemporary. My partner and I had a comedy act, a two-man comedy act, and we had a sketch we did that mm-hmm. everyone loved. It was a pantomime sketch. Mm-hmm. And someone had seen it, and they decided to hire us to play two young detectives to demonstrate what's his name? Get Smart, the...
Don Adams.
Don Adams, yeah. Whose brother was Dick Yarmy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that. They now have a Yarmy's Army mm-hmm. that have a comedy thing ever since he passed away. But mm-hmm. anyway, we're supposed to demonstrate to Get Smart how to foil a bank robber. Mm-hmm. And we did it, and no one knew who we were. And then we came in one day, and my partner, we met at our agent's office. And my partner says, we have an offer for a spinoff to do our own series. I said, oh, that's great. And he said, but our agent said no. He turned it down. He said, you're not getting these guys for $800, whatever we got paid for the show. So his smart move was to head off our starring in our own sitcom.
Good thing he was there to help.
Oh, boy, we escaped a bullet. So we went back to working small clubs.
See, dreams come true.
Yes.
That's it.
Good grief. But you started out, you're from Cleveland.
Born and raised, yes.
Shaker Heights. And you really are an all-American Midwestern guy. You are the kind of person you depict so often.
Uh-huh.
You know, the thing about you is that you play people who don't think they're funny,
uh-huh.
and certainly don't know they're funny.
No,
but they are.
Uh-huh.
And this is what Jimmy Kimmel has been doing with you of late, just plugging you into any kind of role for any kind of current issue, And you can do it. You played the ghost of George Washington one night.
Yes, yes.
You played Santa Claus one night.
Donald Trump's father.
Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, yes. And anything they throw at you, you can just do. And yeah. It's funny, just you're being there.
Yeah, well, the clue to me is to do it as seriously as you can.
Right.
Yes.
Believe mm-hmm. that you're the person.
Sure.
And it'd be easy to act goofy and make mm-hmm. a... Mm-hmm. But I try to believe in my character from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Very indignant if someone doesn't agree with me.
Well, it works.
Yeah, well.
That's why you're so good in the Christopher Guest films.
Yes.
Because that is, Christopher Guest in a nutshell is, it has to be serious.
Yes.
It has to be serious.
Yes.
The ridiculous things that you're doing and saying, what do you mean? It's not a joke.
Yeah.
These are their lives.
And all of his people are the same way. I did a movie that Eugene Levy wrote and directed. It was called Sodbusters. And the very first day on the set, he got us all together and he gave us a pep talk. And he said, now I want you all to play this. Don't anybody try to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Play this as if it's a real thing. It was a takeoff on the movie Shane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come back, Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Kris Kristofferson was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain to him sometimes on the set what was funny. he had a line once that he said, Eugene, I don't know, is that funny? And Eugene said, Fred, explain to Christopher that it is funny. I said, Chris, it is funny. But Christopher is this great musician, and he's a Southern boy. And mm-hmm. I think the line was... Eugene's character was feeding him some kind of food, and it was not very unpalatable. And his line was, maybe I'll try this a little bit on down the line. And he didn't see what was funny about that. Mm-hmm. I said, it's a very funny thing for you to say about some kind of scrambled eggs. He said, well, I'll take your word for it, Fred.
I'm glad he was there. I'm glad you were there to help him.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. You started, I don't know if it's fair to say you started out, but was your first into comedy Second City in Chicago?
No, I started out working with a partner in a duo, comedy working clubs, a fellow I met at a first acting school I went to in New York. We had the same sense of humor, and one day we saw an ad in one of the trades that actors needed for a sketch show. So we went down, and the guy said, do you have your own material? And we said, well, no. Well, come back when you have some of your own sketches. So every week we'd write a sketch and come in and do it for the group. It was like one of the first comedy groups. And after about 6 or 7 weeks, the guy pulled us aside and said, you know, I think we're just going to do a show of your material and forget about this variety show we had. Mm. So we did our first show at a little rehearsal studio in the heart of New York City.
Oh, my.
And then we started playing coffee shops in New York. Then we got an agent and then a manager, and then we started working in. At the time, there were not comedy clubs around the country.
Mm-hmm.
There were folk rooms. Mm-hmm. There were about 7 or 8 around the country, and we'd go in and open for a folk singer
mm-hmm.
or a folk duo. And it was different. There was one... This was San Francisco, The Hungry Eye.
Mm-hmm.
There was one in Chicago, Denver, every major city, there was one club like that.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for people to believe or to remember, or may not be old enough to remember, that there was a time when the idea of a comedy club was unheard of.
No, there was no such thing. I don't know where you do your comedy at the time. We worked in a coffee house. There were coffee houses.
Coffee houses, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we did most of our stuff in New York. There were about 5 down in the village
mm-hmm.
that we'd play in. But then we'd be sent to one wherever there was one around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be a week or two there.
Uh-huh. That has to have been a good training ground. I would think you got an unfiltered reaction from an audience that didn't come to see you.
That's right, exactly. Yes, but it was a polite enough audience that we never. A couple of times we went through the terrible ordeal of opening for a rock singer, but every comic has had that terrible experience.
Yeah.
But the folk rooms, they were very, very respectful.
Right.
And they would get our humor and laugh at us. And it was a small, fairly small rooms. And they'd know we'd be on, well, we would do sometimes 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the star, the folk group would come on. You know,
mm-hmm.
If I had a hammer. You'd hear the same song in every city.
It must have been a mellow audience then.
They were. That was it. They were mellow and polite
mm-hmm.
and all pushing for some just cause.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was this Ace Trucking Company?
No, this was called Before. Greco and Willard.
Okay.
And which one are you?
I'm still, we changed names actually. No, Greco and Willard.
Mm-hmm. And how did Ace Trucking Company come about?
My original partner and I, eventually, he decided he wanted to go out and work as a single, which I thought was kind of crazy because I wrote all the sketches. It turns out that he'd gone around to certain TV shows and sold some of our sketches.
Mm.
Little be known to me, without so much as, Fred, here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Because I came home one night and my wife had watched, I think, the Ed Sullivan Show or the Carol Burnett Show. She said they did the funniest sketch where an actor was receiving an Academy Award and he thanked the person who did his stunts, the person who did his dancing, who did his singing. And I said, the person who did his dramatic scenes and romantic scenes. She said, yeah. I said, I wrote that. That was our sketch.
Oh, jeez.
But anyway, as we traveled around, one of the cities we played in was Chicago. There was a club called the Gate of Horn, where Lenny Bruce had gone before us. And mm-hmm. There were folk acts and different type of comics. And the producers and directors of Second City in Chicago had happened to see us. So they were recasting their show one time and they called our agent and wanted me to come in and audition. They were familiar with my work. And I said, oh, I can't do that. I've seen Second City. I saw them when they first went to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I said, they're so bright and they're so political. And so they said, well, just come in. And there's a bunch of guys. And one of the guys I was auditioning with was Robert Klein.
Mm-hmm.
And they had us in a big group and they'd get two of us to get up and give us a suggestion for an improvisation. And for some reason, I kind of took to it. I'd never improvised before in my life. And by the end of the hour, they said, well, we have time for about one more. Who wants to get up again? Without knowing it, my hand was up because I was having so much fun. So I went and I spent 6 months. First, they signed me for 6 months in Chicago. And I didn't want to leave. I had my eyes on being an off-Broadway or Broadway star. And I was rehearsing with another partner for another group. And they said, well, we'll leave a week. But we have to fill this spot. We'll leave a week open for you. So I finally called some people in Chicago I knew, and I said, is Second City still relevant and hip? They said, oh, yeah. So I reluctantly went off to Second City in Chicago. And then after 6 months, they asked me to stay another six. And I said, well, you know, Broadway's waiting. But I stayed a total of a year. And when I got back, I'd been back in New York a couple of weeks, and got cast in a play in the Village called Little Murders, which is directed by Alan Arkin.
And written by Jules Feiffer.
Jules Feiffer, yes.
Yeah, I remember it.
It was a wonderful. It had been on Broadway 2 years before and had been a failure.
Mm-hmm.
But Jules Feiffer rewrote it and recast it, and it was a big hit. And someone came to me and said, Fred, we're organizing a comedy group right down the street at the Bitter End.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love you to be in it. And I said, well, that's a good idea. I still have some ideas for sketches I'd written it for Second City. So we started doing that at nights after the show. After Little Murders, we'd go in the midnight show. And someone came down to see us from The Tonight Show and wanted to book us. They said, what do you call yourself? And we said, well, nothing. We don't have a name. So they threw out a lot of corny names like Laugh Out instead of Laugh In. And one of our characters was doing a very funny character where he was being interviewed. And we said, what do you do? He says, I'm the head truck driver for the Ace Trucking Company in Brooklyn, we thought that was so generic that every mm-hmm. city would have an Ace typewriter mm-hmm. and Ace trucking. We used that name and had to spend 4 years explaining to everyone what came up with. But that was a whole different thing. We were very successful. We played some folk rooms, but then we played colleges mm-hmm. and auditoriums. We did open for rock groups mm-hmm. and held our own pretty much because people saw us. We did a bunch of Johnny Carson shows, about 50.
I know, that's just incredible. That's when the Tonight Show was still in New York.
Yes.
And there was a time when the Tonight Show was still in New York. And I mean, that's extraordinary to be asked back so many times.
They went 1 week, we were on twice because Mama Cass guest hosted, mm-hmm. I think on a Monday. She asked us to be on. Mm-hmm. And then on Friday, Johnny was back. So twice in 1 week. And what they would do, we'd come in with a sketch we'd wrote, and they would build a set for us. Like mm-hmm. once we were five bikers who came in to buy some kind of shoes, and we ended up buying fancy purses and hats and all. But they built a store for us. Huh. And then afterwards, when we'd go out on the road, we found it hard to do because there was no store, there were no props.
Yeah.
But people had seen us on the Tonight Show, and so we could hold our own with a rock group. And mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun. We played colleges and we did one of the last Ed Sullivan shows.
Oh, my.
When it was in color. We had a lot of fun. It was a whole different thing working with five people than working with two, because with two, if a show would go poorly, it'd say, well, you know, you missed this line here. We mm-hmm. didn't, our timing was off. With five people, we'd go out, if the show didn't do well, and the owner would say, oh, well, there's only one show tonight, there's no audience for the second, we'd say, oh, great, where can we go to eat dinner? It didn't faze us at all. If we bombed, we'd laugh it off.
Huh,
it was
neat.
someone characterized this as a cartoon, a living cartoon. We'd come rolling out on the stage. And, we had a lot of fun. We'd do 20 minutes of set material, 20 minutes of improvisation, then close with a pre-written sketch. And we always did well. I'm sure if I look back, I'd think of sometimes we didn't do well, but we usually killed.
Oh, that's neat.
We'd play little theaters in the round, like in Dallas. And, mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun.
Now, I have to ask you, Ed Sullivan.
Yeah. Oh.
What are your memories of doing that show?
Well, that was interesting. I did it both with Willard and Greco and with Ed Sullivan. The funniest stories came when we were doing it originally with my partner, Greco. And he was famous for making mistakes. One time he introduced someone in the audience. He said, ladies and gentlemen, the heavyweight champion of the world is with us, Jack Dempsey, stand up. And Jack Dempsey stood up. And he says, the vice admiral of the Pacific Fleet, Jack Dempsey. And another one I remember, he had the two guys and two girls, very famous group. Anyway, he had them on. It might have been the Supremes. Who was the first African-American group to be successful on American television? They looked at each other and said, I don't know who. And he said, I don't know. I was asking you. And then Jerry Stiller and Ann Mirren had a famous story, in which I think he did to us, too. We would do sketches. Mm-hmm. And they'd come up to us at the last minute and say, cut 2 minutes. Which would drive you crazy. What could you do?
Yeah.
But, then we tried out our introduction to him, to us, and we had this kind of introduction where I'd say, good evening, I'm Vic Greco, and this is Fred Willard. And he'd whisper in my ear, and I'd say, oh, of course, I'm sorry, I'm Fred Willard, and this is Vic Greco. And we did it right to his face sitting, and he looked at us, he says, oh, that's okay, I understand, go ahead. I thought we'd made a mistake.
Was he as dull in person as he came
across?
Well,
I didn't know him personally, but they say he was. But later I read about very good things he did. It was his first show I'm probably wrong, but of his kind. And to be on the Ed Sullivan Show meant you could now go to perform in big rooms.
Oh, sure. It was a huge deal.
Yeah.
The Tonight Show, another show we did was Steve Allen. Mm-hmm. That show would put you more in the coffee houses with the younger mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Red Sullivan, you'd work at the Palmer House in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Steve Allen, you'd work in the Gatorhorn in Chicago.
Wow.
You know, Lenny Bruce got busted there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I read about that.
And talk about your impressions of Johnny Carson. You were on that show so often.
Johnny Carson was very cold and noncommittal. Mm-hmm. Huh. He would laugh. He enjoyed us. And I think Doc Severinsen really loved us because Doc Severinsen took a liking to one of our characters, Billy Saluga, whose best character was, "You don't have to call me Ray. You can call me Jay. You can call me RJ. You can call me RJJ." And they just loved it. And they said one time we were doing a sketch, and I didn't see it, but they said Johnny Carson actually fell off of his chair. And he left. And they would have us back.
So he was a good audience.
It was a wonderful audience.
I mean, he was a good audience.
He was a wonderful audience, very mm-hmm. supportive. Mm-hmm. And it was a great show to do. It was the show to do at the mm-hmm. time.
Mm-hmm.
But there was never, come on over and sit down, guys, or come on back to the dressing room and hang out.
It was
never
that kind of thing.
No.
But that's what's sort of mind-blowing is when you watch Ed Sullivan now, mm-hmm. and growing up in the house I grew up in, you know, you hear these names over and over again. It is confusing trying to understand why anyone would watch Ed Sullivan.
Well, no one watched Ed Sullivan.
Yes,
he just pointed.
But it was the same.
And the axe came
out. But it blew your mind.
Yeah.
Because you're going, why? Johnny Carson was at least, he was funny. He was charismatic. You got it.
Yes.
But
mm-hmm.
then hearing about the stories later.
Yeah.
That he was cold, that he wasn't Mr. Warm and Fuzzy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's kind of wild.
Well, at the time when we started doing Johnny Carson, it was an hour and a half. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I found out later that I'd forgotten. We were on the famous show where Burt Reynolds and everyone ended up throwing cream pies mm-hmm. at each other. And I was watching it. I said, my God, we're on at the end of this show. And it had been an hour and 15 minutes,
yep.
and I said, we're going to be slaughtered. We came out, we did a sketch that lasted 8 minutes, and it killed. The audience at the time was geared for that. They were, mm-hmm. okay, Burt Reynolds was funny, Dom DeLuise, mm-hmm. There was an author, there's a singer, and now the Ace Trucking Company. And we came out and did quite well. Now today, you'd get 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And try to make it tight and... It's funny to watch some of the talk shows, the last guest that's on, talks real fast like that. Well, the show's up and running, and I loved working with so-and-so. They really have to push for time. Then Johnny Carson went to 4 nights and mm-hmm. down to an hour. And,
yeah.
Who's your favorite now? Because you were with the legends, so who do you like now of our talk show hosts?
Well, that's an unfair question. Mr. Kimmel is employing
our guest.
Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah,
I do. Well, I'm sorry. Please, I was setting you up. No,
he's had us on. I kind of tune in. At times I love Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
I remember watching him, and he was in a little studio, and you felt like you were in a frat house.
Yeah.
And only you and a few other people were watching it. James Corden, I kind of like. It's a big, splashy show. And I like that he comes out to applause, and he quiets the audience down and says, let's get into the news. He's right into the material.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Who else?
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy
There's
Fallon,
so
I watched us at times. It usually depends on who's the guest. I'll look
sure.
to see
yeah.
who's
sure.
the guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just interesting because there are not that many people who have been on with the legends.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, even the idea, Letterman and Leno, there will come a point where those names don't have the same kind of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Because for my whole life, they were on TV. And now it's, I don't even know how many years already, because I have no sense of time. But there will come a point when they will sort of be like the Johnny Carsons in the sense that, oh, you know, I did Letterman. Oh, yeah. You know, I did Leno back in the day.
Yeah, I used to go on David Letterman on my own. And he was very funny. He was a wonderful host. He
yeah.
was funny. He was very supportive. The first few times he was known for, at the commercial break, he would just turn away. He wouldn't communicate with you. And I think it changed at one time. He would lean over and say something. I'd forget what he'd say,
mm-hmm.
but just to show a little intimacy with the guest.
Mm-hmm.
But I would plan to do that show. I would plan some comedy sketch soon. I came on once with a knife stuck in my chest, and my first line was, did you ever realize how cranky New Yorkers are getting lately? And then I think I did one where I saw a guy steal something from Bloomingdale's. He stole it, and a minute later came back and asked if it was they would gift wrap it for him. And the lady says, well, it'll cost you to have it gift wrapped. And the guy said, oh, that's all right. Money is no object. But I always try to have
something
funny
ready,
to get
something
him
prepared. Good.
Yeah.
Because you're a pro.
Yeah.
And that's the way to play that. Now, you were on Jay Leno's Tonight Show like 100 times.
Oh, doing sketches. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Jay was, that was so much fun because they would, just before I'd go on, they'd say, make Jay laugh. They encouraged me to mm-hmm. ad-lib. So I was in the basement with the cue cards. Jay was upstairs in the studio. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to throw him. I also played a guy with a cocktail in his hand. Mm-hmm. Maybe he had one too many drinks. So I was a little off, and I'd refer to someone off stage. I said, I'm talking to Jay Leno here. Yeah, I don't know why. And occasionally I'd say, are we still on, Jay? But Jay would be amused. But I'd throw a joke at him, and mm-hmm. you couldn't top Jay. He'd come mm-hmm. back with another joke. But it was wonderful. And a couple of times after I was done, I'd be in my dressing room. There'd be a commercial. And Jay would come into my dressing room to say, that was a great spot. Thank you.
Oh, that's nice.
So it was really
that's
fun
thoughtful.
To be on his show.
That's
yeah,
great.
I think I did it about 90 times.
Yeah, my, oh, my. I was looking through all these credits, which I say are so voluminous. And there was a special you did with George Burns. Do you recall that?
It was the George Burns Comedy Hour. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with George Burns. It was Steve Martin, mm-hmm. and it was a comedy half hour. Mm-hmm. But I did it with Joe Flaherty and Eugene Levy mm-hmm. and a lot of Second City people. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it was called the George Burns Comedy Hour. It only lasted one season, but it was so much fun to do because mm-hmm. I loved all the actors I was working with.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, I don't believe I ever met George Burns mm-hmm. or did anything with him. Mm-hmm. I met Red Skelton.
Oh, I mm-hmm. loved Red.
You know, you go back and think of people you actually met. Mm-hmm. My wife used to tell me that I had dinner with Vincent Price, and I had to think very hard. I said, yes, that's right. When I first got here, someone knew Vincent Price. Mm-hmm. And we'd go out to dinner, and I a couple of times I met him, and I wish I'd remember a little more.
Oh, I know. As somebody says, if you knew it was going to be history, you would have paid more attention.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the first time I became aware of you was, like millions of other people, was seeing you with Martin Mull on Fernwood Tonight.
Oh, yes.
In the late 70s, which then morphed into America. No, it was first America
Fernwood,
Tonight.
First
Fernwood
Tonight.
Then America Tonight.
Yes.
Which was a late night, a nightly show, five nights a week. And if any of you have not seen it, and it's anywhere online, take the time to look it up because
it's on YouTube. I think
is
yeah,
it
you can
great.
Watch it.
Everything's
on
YouTube.
YouTube.
That's
yes.
where you go to see all the good stuff. Martin Mull was the host of this very low rent, talk show
in Fernwood, Ohio.
In Fernwood, Ohio, and you had those old fashioned aluminum TV snack tables. Uh-huh. Instead of a desk, and you were his,
right.
and you were his Ed McMahon, his sidekick,
yes.
Jerry Hubbard.
Yes, I was the local small town hero who was signed on to be his assistant, and that was so much fun. Martin was another person you couldn't top. I mm-hmm. after a while we would ad lib a lot, mm-hmm. and if I planted a joke in his mind that we were going to do 10 minutes into the show. Mm-hmm. He was paying no attention to me, but when the time came, he had the joke. He mm-hmm. knew it. So he's a great partner to work with.
And Frank Duvall, who
yes.
was a great musician and composer and a guy who worked in Hollywood for decades, was also an actor.
Yes.
And in that show, he played Happy Kine.
Yes.
The band leader, Happy Kine and his Mirthmakers.
Yes.
Deadpan, the ultimate deadpan
yes,
performance.
Yes.
He was just perfect.
He was wonderful, and at the time I had no idea who he was, and then I started seeing his name at the end of credits of TV shows.
Sure.
Music by Duvall.
Yep.
And he was just a sweet man, and the musicians were all stars, mm-hmm. Who again I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day a guy said, your guitarist is so-and-so, right? I said, how did you know that? He said, I was listening and I could tell by his guitar licks. Mm. So jazz and music fans knew who they all were.
Oh, my. What an experience that must have been. Did you do one a day?
We did two a day, three days a week. Mm-hmm. And the only one who had cue cards was Martin. Mm-hmm. The performer would come in and we'd run through the show once. And the producer would say, all right, be back at 4 o'clock. And they'd say, that's it? We're not going to rehearse again? So it kind of flew by the seat of its pants because if we rehearsed it more, it may not have been as funny.
Right.
This way it was, if someone had something funny to throw in. So it was very realistic. And a lot of people thought it was a real cable show from Fernwood, Ohio. And some of Norman Lear, who produced it, his celebrity friends fell in love with it. And please get me on that show. I've got to get on the show. So when they picked it up for the second year, they said, what are we going to do? How are we going to justify that all Charlton Heston and people like that mm-hmm. are going to be in Fernwood, Ohio? So they changed it to, I think, Altacoma, California, the unfinished furniture capital of the United States. So that would explain how, Burt mm-hmm. Lancaster and Carol Burnett and all would be driving by and get recruited.
Wow. And of course, if it was a little ragged or things went slightly askew, that was part of the show anyway.
Yeah, of course.
You couldn't go wrong, really.
Yeah. I remember one show I started talking about having something and them calling me Fred. And this went on, they let me go on about a minute. And Martin says, it's funny they would call you Fred. And I realized I made the mistake. And I forgot how I got out of it.
Well, and this began a partnership between you and Martin.
Yes.
That has continued over the decades.
Yes, we've done a lot of things together. With some of his specials we did in a movie called, I can't think of it, but with Annette Funicello, mm-hmm. and where we played business co-workers. And he was always wonderful to work with.
And then you did a very high-profile reunion with Martin on Roseanne's show.
That's right. My gosh, you see some of these things I've
you've been working a long time, Fred.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
And the funny thing, Roseanne was a big fan of Fernwood Tonight.
Uh-huh.
And she loved Martin, and by comparison, she loved me, too, because I was mm-hmm. part of the show. And she and her husband, and I always forget which was her husband at the time, they talked to me about being, why don't you come on the show? We'd love to have you on the show. I said, well, that's a great idea. And I said, I have a funny idea. Since Martin was my boss on Fernwood Tonight, what if I come on as his boss? They said, well, think about it. And about a month later, they called and they said, we'd like you to be his gay lover. And I said, well, that's kind of awkward. This was back, I don't know.
It's the mid-90s.
The 90s. I said, I don't know if I want to. We have this relationship that people remember. So I passed on it, and a couple of weeks later, one of the writers called and said, Fred, we have this idea that you and Martin are gay lovers. You get married and adopt a baby. I said, I can't say no to this. So we were the first gay wedding on TV.
Yep.
We beat Friends by about a month.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was a very big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was so much fun. The wedding was something... I still have it on videotape. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They had Judy Garland impersonators, Liza Minnelli impersonators. And I loved working. Roseanne treated us very well. I heard horror stories about, and I saw this kind of tangentially some horror stories on the set, but we'd back away.
Sure,
I say to Martin,
sure.
Let's leave. There's something brewing here.
Good survival skills there, yeah.
See, it's part of what's so wild is to hear you talking about Martin, because most people around my age know him in part from Roseanne, but then from Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I had no clue the man was funny.
Oh.
And a lot of people don't because of what they've grown up seeing him in.
Uh-huh.
So it's only when my parents would talk about Fernwood that I would go and find the videos and see, oh my God, he's hilarious.
He's on a series now called I'm Sorry, which I haven't seen, but I'm told he's very funny.
Yeah.
And he can play so many different things, and he's very funny.
You even did an appearance together on Dexter's Laboratory, the cartoon series.
Oh, I forget that. Yeah.
Well, that was just be a voiceover job for you.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it was, it's one more notch in the gun belt
oh,
there
yeah.
Of work, working together. Do you remember when you first encountered Christopher Guest?
Yes, I was doing an off-Broadway play in New York, and I'm not sure I encountered him. It was called Little Murders,
mm-hmm.
written by Jules Pfeiffer and directed mm-hmm. by Alan Arkin. And they formed a second cast, you know, to replace, as a replacement cast.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher Guest was in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably said hello, goodbye to him. And his mother was a very important casting lady at the time for CBS.
Mm-hmm.
So every actor knew her. And I'm sure I presented my 8x10 photo to her many
mm-hmm.
times. And,
mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you, Fred. You're a darling. Thank you for coming in. We'll keep this. But I was a huge fan of his, and I got cast in Spinal Tap because
mm-hmm.
I'd worked with Eugene Levy and, Harry Shearer and Michael McKean I'd worked with.
Mm-hmm.
They had a comedy group at the time, and we'd combined our comedy teams once when a couple of our members were missing. That's a whole mm-hmm. other hour. But I did. I played the Army Air Force lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
And I met with Christopher, and we had to hang out at somebody's house in our downtime, and he was making jokes. And I was feeding him, you know, probing him to do jokes. Next thing I knew, I got a call from him. Well, he did a pilot, and he wanted me to be on. Rob Reiner mm-hmm. directed it. And so I said, sure, because Catherine O'Hara was on it. Then one time he called me, he said, Fred, I'm doing this movie. I think we're going to call it Waiting for Guffman. And I'd like to talk to you about it. So I went down to his office and he explained it to me. He says, you're the first one I've asked to be in it. We're trying to get Catherine O'Hara. She hasn't committed yet. And it's going to be done in Austin, Texas. He says, there's no script. It's all improvised. And I said, oh, gee, that's great. You don't have to memorize, you know, because in act you have to memorize scripts. And I was walking into my car and I said, wait a minute, I'm going to have to make up the lines. So we did that movie and it was so much fun. And I worked with all of my idols, Christopher Guest, Catherine O'Hara, Bob Balaban. Mm-hmm. It didn't come out for quite a while because the production company, the producers, weren't quite sure what they had.
Mm-hmm.
Although Spinal Tap had been good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Christopher didn't direct that. Rob Reiner did.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then came Best in Show, was a big...
Before we get to that one, so yeah. Waiting for Guffman comes out.
Yes.
And Spinal Tap had had a loyal following.
Yes.
It wasn't like a blockbuster movie, but it was a movie that people in the know, and
yeah.
hip people, you know.
Every musician told me they'd memorize the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, to this
and
day.
People, people on the set would say they'd memorize certain lines, but mm-hmm. musicians knew every line.
Yeah. Sure. And then Waiting for Guffman comes, and again, it sort of catches you by surprise.
Yes.
Because that film has a spontaneity to it.
Yes.
That is just irresistible, I think.
Yes.
Parker Posey, everybody in it
yes.
is so, so good. And then Best in Show.
One of my favorite movies
yeah.
ever.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to have been his biggest.
I think it was the biggest commercial success.
Commercial
yes.
success.
And also, I think it shows you off so spectacularly.
Oh, God.
And everybody who has seen it is convinced that the fellow you're with was a real commentator. And that's Jim Piddock.
Jim Piddock.
Who is not a real commentator
knew
at all.
Nothing more about dogs than I did.
But that's one of the things I remember learning years later, that you guys weren't there, that you were responding, you were watching on a monitor
yes.
the whole thing. And it's like, well, hey, hang on. So it's just two of you just sitting there,
yeah.
watching that,
looking at an empty arena. but Christopher would say, "Okay, now the show dogs are coming on. Now the miniatures," and I'd prepared some jokes,
mm-hmm.
and others just popped into my head spontaneously, because
mm-hmm.
I said, "He's going to cut a lot of my stuff." Just mm-hmm. it's just the announcer, so I'm going to throw every corny joke, every thought I have. I'm not going to censor myself and say, will this work? I'm just going to say it.
It's honestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was great fun.
And I'm thinking about it, and I'm laughing because it's just, and you with your little red bow tie, it's just so damn funny. It's so good. But that's the thing. All of his films, I think he's a genius. I love.
Oh, Christopher, yeah, definitely.
I love his work.
And now let's not forget For Your Consideration.
Which again.
And again, now did
your
anyone?
The hair alone.
That's what I was going to say.
Your hair alone.
Did anyone know ahead of time what you were going to look like when you showed up on day one?
No, I don't think so. No, they gave me a faux hawk.
Oh yeah, they did. I think it had bleached tips.
Bleached blonde.
Like it was magnificent.
And. Before we started filming, Christopher said to me, you're working with Jane Lynch. Mm-hmm. He said, I think it'd be funny if you wouldn't let her talk. You just kept talking and talking. I said, that's a funny idea. And he said, I had another thought. It would be funny if we don't let her know you're going to do that. And I said, now, wait, no, I don't want to do that because I was a little frightened of Jane. So we got along very well and did it. Had a fun twosome. She was very funny too.
Oh well, she's great in all those films.
Yes.
And but you two together are just it's just so damn
and Fred,
funny.
For me, growing up at ET and watching my dad and all the different people on ET, I died watching that film.
It's one of my favorite of his movies, and surprising, it's not as well known.
No, it's not.
And it ought to be better known.
Yeah. And it's very sad. There's things you almost want to cry when Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, Catherine O'Hara.
At the end.
That film is just.
She's spectacular.
Because at the beginning of the film, someone suggested she teaches acting. And she said, no, I wouldn't, you know, I'm an actress. And the last film in the movie, I think, is her teaching some class.
Yeah.
She didn't get the Academy Award. But the way she manipulates her face.
Yeah.
Through it, where they give her plastic, I say, quote unquote, plastic surgery.
Yeah.
No, she's an amazing lady.
Yeah.
Now, way back, I'm jumping all over the place because there's so many things I want to ask you about. You actually did host Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, that was great.
In 1978, the year of our Lord, 1978.
Yeah.
Tell us about that experience.
I was thrilled to be called to do it. And we'd been at an Emmy presentation. I knew John Belushi from Second City, and I'd taken him around the Improv when he walked in after about their third show. No one knew who he was. And I introduced him. John, you got to tell people what you're on. I love your show.
This is when the show had only been on the air 3 or 4 years.
No. Oh.
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, but this is the first time. It was the first year. And he was walked around like he didn't know what's going on. So it was 78. It wasn't his third year. There was an event, an Emmy event, and Lorne Michaels and the Saturday Night crew were there having dinner. And my wife said, why don't you go over and say hello to them? I said, I don't want to do that. No, go over and just say, you know, they know who you are. And so I went over and, hi, nice to see you. And, oh, good. So about a week later, I got a call. They would like you to host Saturday Night Live. I think the story was Muhammad Ali was supposed to host and change his mind. He didn't want to do it. So who we get? Oh, the guy who came over and said hello to us.
And you had to do all his material, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I had to fight. But it was an interesting thing. When you're standing backstage before you go on, we'd had a dress rehearsal. And they wouldn't work with me on the monologue. And about Friday, I'd say, usually they'd come up and write a monologue for you. They said, oh, we'll come up with something. And I said, oh, so I decided to just make up my own. And you're standing backstage with 30 seconds. And first you realize how many people are watching it because it goes out live. And then you forget all that. Your mind can't comprehend that. It's just, oh, these people out here are sitting out here and they went out and did it. And I did the sketches, and I just got through it. And then we went down to an after party at number 1 Fifth Avenue. And I was every actor sat at their own table. And I said it to Gilda. I said, but it is nice that Saturday Night Live is treating you to an after party after every show. She's, oh, they're not. We all pay for it ourselves.
Oh, God.
And Devo was the musical act, and it was a big thrill.
What an experience.
Yeah.
And again, live television was, as it is today, I mean, national live television is a real rarity.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine the adrenaline that has to pump when you're doing that.
Yeah, and it's still the show to watch through the years. Mm-hmm. Saturday night, you tape it, you watch it. Some things are hit, some things missed. Then mm-hmm. you realize they got 6 days to come up with an hour and a half show.
Yeah.
And so many stars have come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's lasted so long. And people find it hard to duplicate it because they don't do it live, the mm-hmm. live to tape or something. Mm-hmm. But
no, it's and every generation has its own cast members embedded in their consciousness. You know, because Alice and I had just gotten married, and we started watching it when it was new, when it was brand new, and they called the original cast the Not Ready for Primetime Players, because that was the joke. The joke was that they were kind of the off-Broadway of television, and then they all went on to meteoric careers.
Yes,
And it's part of, now it is part of history. It's part
of it is.
TV history and pop culture history.
Yeah.
And you were there.
I was there. I was there,
Now, you got to work with Rob Reiner again on a little movie that I like called The Magic of Belle Isle.
Yes.
With Morgan Freeman. That's a nice little film.
It is a very sweet film. And we did it in upstate New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I got to work with Morgan Freeman. And I remember Rob Reiner, and he told my agent, he said, we'd like to, they paid me scale. They said, if Fred doesn't want to do it, we'll get a local day player. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I want to work with Rob Reiner. The money's no object. So I got up there and I worked for a week. And when I was in the makeup trailer at the end of the week, the makeup lady says, boy, Rob was so excited that you were going to do it. He wrote the part with you in mind. But it was a lot of fun. I loved Rob Reiner and working with Morgan Freeman. I was very intimidated by Morgan Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And the last day I was sitting with him, I had a scene to do with him. I said, I got to talk to him. So I said, do you still own a jazz club in Louisiana? And he looked at me kind of funny. He says, yes, indeed I do. And I said, well, I just bought a CD set of Smiley Lewis. He's Smiley Lewis. He said, oh, I hear you knocking. I said, yeah. So he lit up and we talked. I said, it's been an honor working with you. And this is my last day on the set. And he gave me a big handshake. But that was a nice film to do.
Lovely. Absolutely lovely. It's a little sleeper. It's not mm-hmm. a big deal.
No.
But it's good.
It's a sweet movie.
It's good. I want to ask you something. I hope that you won't mind. Because you've done so many things. You've done, every generation seems to discover you. And want you. I mean, Everybody Loves Raymond wanted you, and you came in there and you earned 3 Emmy nominations.
Yes.
And then Modern Family wanted you.
Yes.
And you've been there as Ty Burrell's father. But you also have been on some shows that haven't been hits. And I wonder what that feels like. I mean, you did a show called Back to You with Kelsey Grammer.
Yes.
It looked like it had all the ingredients for success.
Everything. And I still think of some of the funny lines and situations on it. 2 problems. One, it came at a time when all the critics said, this is a 3-camera show. They're out of date.
Mm.
You got to do on film, with the audience, with the laugh track. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time, people were a little confused that Kelsey Grammer, Frasier,
mm-hmm.
was in another role. Why is he doing this? Why? Mm-hmm. This is Frasier. And I think it was just too many stars. But it was a very funny. And then the writer's strike hit right in the middle of it. And we were laid off for about 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it turns out the head of the network had never watched the show. But we did do 22 or 23 of them.
Yeah, you got a full season out of it.
Yes.
And you played the sportscaster, right?
Which paid off because that was the year, as a sports guy, my PR man called. He says, you wait to see what you're going to get out of this. They got the Super Bowl this year.
Huh.
They got the World Series, the baseball all-star team. They're going to take you. And they did. They flew us with private jet to all those events.
Wow. Because
it was on the same network, Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So that was worth it.
That's neat.
I got to announce the starting lineup in Colorado for the the Red Sox Colorado team, the final World Series game.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Oh, that's great. And you're such a great baseball fan. What a neat thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, all right, Anchorman. Because I would think that that must come up quite a bit.
It does. And I loved Will Ferrell. He's the sweetest man. And it was a funny movie. And it's one of the few times in working that I've cracked up. And I narrowly escaped having to ruin a take laughing. When he says, "You go fuck yourself, San Diego." And that's the end of the show. And he leans back, "Good show, everyone. Nice show." And the next scene was I had to walk up to him and tell him he was fired. And I couldn't. I was laughing so hard at the look on his face. And they kept calling, "Cut. Well, let's try that again. Let's try." And they didn't realize I was cracking up and I couldn't do the scene. Finally, I got myself together to come up and I said, "I've got to fire you." And I got to fire you too, buddy. No. Look, I was I was the nervous Nelly.
It's another one, though, where you're playing your normal sort of, not quite deadpan because you're emotionally reacting.
Yeah.
But you're saying the most ridiculous things with a straight face.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so funny. And it is, it's on TV constantly, so people see it all the time.
Yeah, be careful what you write on the cue cards. He'll say anything sees.
Anything you put onto the prompter, he will read. And he does.
Now, you have so many... I mean, you could put a little asterisk next to everything that stands out in your resume. One of them that's a standout is you are the only live character in the Pixar movie WALL-E.
Yes, I was the first human being to be in their cartoons. That was exciting, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they flew me and my whole family up to Pixar in an effort to win me over to do their, like I would have done it if they said, "We only have $150 and bring your own wardrobe." But there was just, my grandson was such a fan of Pixar films. They said, "Well, bring him up." Well, they gave him a tour of the place. And that was a big thrill, doing that.
And I can only imagine the feedback you must have gotten at the time that came out.
Not so much. People still say, "Oh, that's right. You were one of the voices," but
not quite.
It was a wonderful movie because it was a great message for the young kids, without hitting them over the head with it, to save the planet. Yeah. You know, go green.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful movie. I love everything they do. Pixar, they're phenomenal.
And you're a part of it now.
Yes,
you're part of that history too.
Yeah. So I used to be able to sort of explain that Leonard has an Alice and Fred has a Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And your wife, Mary, passed away pretty recently.
Yes.
And we have to talk about her a little bit because she's such an important and incredible lady.
Yes, yes.
I want to make sure everyone knows a little bit more about her.
She was very supportive. Couldn't have been more supportive. Almost every job or something I have, she'd come along and sit there. And I told her, "Now, the first thing you have to do when I get off stage is say, 'You were terrific.'" And if I wasn't, wait till the next day and then say, "Incidentally, that one thing you said, I wouldn't have said it that way." But I would run lines past her and ideas. And sometimes she'd say, "No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do it." And I'd say, "Oh, my God, she's right."
But Mary was the Catholic version of my very Jewish mother.
Oh.
Where it's that they're really... They are loud women. Our women, they are loud women. They are passionate and very mothery to everybody. And that's one of the big things is I think part of why people appreciate you the way that you do, the way they do, is because you have always embraced all kinds of comedians, young and old. So you've never sort of gone, "Well, no, in my day, we did it like this." You know, "Oh, no, now I don't, who are these young kids? I don't care about them." You've always embraced it. And I think that's part of why they love you. Yeah. Going to your house for a party, because Mary knew how to throw a party.
Oh, yes.
Was the most overwhelming thing because you had, Jeff Ross and Norm MacDonald and like the wildest array of comedians.
Joanne Worley would be there. Jimmy Kimmel came a couple of years.
Yeah. Yep.
Weird Al.
Weird Al. That was a good one. But, you know, it's like she was like den mother.
Yes.
To all of these comedians.
People would call with problems and talk to Mary, and she was had a very decisive answer for everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't even, she was so decisive that you just take her advice.
Yes.
Which is part of life. If you make a decision, I'm a Virgo, mm-hmm. which means I'm very indecisive. If I can decide on something, then you can go full steam ahead.
Yeah.
But if you have that nagging doubt, is this the right thing to do? Mm-hmm. It slows you down.
Yeah. But seeing her with everybody.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah.
Going, all right, kid.
Yeah.
You got this. It's okay.
Yeah.
But it was a big deal, and it meant a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big loss. The big,
of course.
Big emptiness now.
But now Freddie, your grandson.
He's a killer.
I can't believe he's a senior. We've watched him grow up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And was in high school. I think he played Professor Harold Hill in a school production.
Oh my gosh! Is that a, I was. That was my favorite musical of all time. I saw Robert Preston do it. Mm-hmm. And when he was going to play Professor Harold Hill, I thought, oh, am I going to be able to go see this? Because I know there's going to be problems. There's going to be something. He cracked it 100% 3 nights in a row.
Wow.
And none of us, even his father and mother, said, we don't know where this came from. It was just amazing.
But that's the thing, is that Freddie, so at your rather famous July 4th party, where you do light the fireworks yourself, and it scares the crap out of me. Freddie would get up on stage. Mary would write little skits. And a lot of your friends would get up. Your incredibly talented friends would get up and do it, but so would Freddie. And I was always so impressed, because to get up in front of that kind of a crowd
yes.
should be terrifying. And Freddie just did it.
Yeah, he did it. And,
I
remember one time in our living room, he tried a magic act and all. All the friends were sitting around, and they started to heckle him. He was like 12 years old, and he just took it. I said, if he can stand up to this, nothing's going to bother him.
That's right. That's right. Well, I was sitting with Phil Rosenthal, watching him up there, and the two of us are going, this kid's pretty good.
Yeah.
This kid's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm so happy that he's doing what he loves and that he's going to continue the legacy.
I don't know what he wants to be, but he was always game for... For everything, we did a sketch where it was Truman Capote and his son. He would sit on my lap. We both had Truman Capote hats. And he didn't know what, but I would say this and say that, and he'd do it without questioning. He's a pip. We love him.
Yeah.
He's got good bloodlines.
He does.
Yeah.
He's got good bloodlines for sure. Fred, it's so nice to have you here.
Well, thanks. I'm so flattered that you asked me.
Little place here, and we're delighted. We're delighted. I'm sure our listeners will be equally delighted.
Every once in a while, we're watching a movie on television, and I say, and I got about three of your books sitting in my bookcase. I said, I should call Leonard and ask him what he thinks of this movie. And I said, I can't do that.
Yeah,
I can't call
I'm telling you now, you definitely can.
Okay.
Because I do it, and everyone else, you are more than welcome.
You're more than welcome.
Anytime you like.
Phone line is open.
Yeah,
I
also say he's always great for crossword puzzles. What's the dog?
The Thin Man's dog is Asta.
That's
A-S-T-A.
It, yes.
Yes. Things you need to know.
That's right.
For crossword puzzles. Or at least used to need to know for crossword puzzles.
And you are on social media. You are on the Twitter.
Yes,
with help. Twitter.
With a little bit of help from
That's
my
right.
friends, as they, as I said to the Beatles once, I do it with a little bit of help from my friends. They say, oh, let's write that down.
So is that at Fred Willard? At Fred
yes.
Willard.
Yeah. Well, there too. Just Leonard has a Jesse, Fred has a Hope. So and Hope is with us silently, the silent partner of this operation. She's your new Greco.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. No.
Only she wouldn't sell an act out from under you.
No.
I'm sure. No.
She would never do that.
Or would she?
Fred, it's been a treat having you here. Thanks so much.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks. I'm very honored to be asked to be in. Jesse, thank you.
It's all me.
Here.
You're welcome.
I remember the night you helped us light the fireworks.
Oh, God,
when all
yeah.
the guys disappeared.
You yes.
You need help? I said, you sure do. Come on.
And I still have eyebrows. So hooray for me.
Good.
So, Jesse, where do people find us when we're not doing our podcast?
You are at Leonard Maltin. I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff. We also have a Patreon now that we call our Maltreon. Go to Patreon and look it up, Malton on Movies.
Patreon is a way you can help us continue doing what we're doing, and we thank you for your support. So that's it for this time. We'll see you next week, folks. Bye-bye. Malton on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.